was becoming difficult to see, but it looked like he was inside 4 minutes. The liquid from the sprinkler supply didn't just have a foul stench, it was also oddly thick and slimy, making every surface slippery to the touch, making the floor itself like an ice rink for Ryan and his burden.
I can walk, Dad.
Ryan ignored the faint voice in his ear and dashed into the anteroom. He half shut the door behind himself with his foot, gaining a little ease in both breathing and seeing.
Oh, fuck!
The lights went out. Ryan's mind raced as he considered the awful possibilities. The sprinkler and the comp warning voice had both malfunctioned. Now the lighting was gone. How long before some key part of the Matrans unit controls also went down? If that happened, then who knew how many miles he and Dean would have to cover on foot.
Dad?
Shh! Damn it!
The fire was now so intense that they had no chance at all of making it to the sector to try to get it open. Ryan and Dean's best hope was to jump out of the place before it crumbled to ashes around their ears. If they couldn't, if the end was inevitable, Ryan had already made the decision to shoot his son, and then himself. Better than burning alive.
Put the lights on, Dad!
The boy started to wriggle as though he wanted to be put down on the floor, but Ryan simply held him tighter. 1 foot at a time, he carefully walked across the little room, feeling the step into the gateway with the toe of his right boot. Ryan stepped up and into the chamber, stooping to lay Dean quickly down, dropping the rifle alongside him. Ryan could see the brightness of the fire through the half-open door of the anteroom, giving him just enough light to also make out the heavy gray armor glass door.
Oh, thank God.
Ryan flung himself onto the floor, reaching out and grabbing hold of Dean's wrist.
We'll be all right.
Not another.
We'll be sick. We'll live.
The smell of burning plastic seared his throat. The smoke was making his eye water. The discs had started to glow in the ceiling and all across the floor. Ryan snatched a last glance at his cron and the light from the metal discs. It showed that 29 minutes and 15 seconds had elapsed since the last jump.
Damn, that was close.
Dean dreamed, but he didn't know that it was just a dream. Every last detail was etched too finely across his brain for it to be anything but reality. He was underground, crawling through soft, warm mud. Movement was made more difficult because his legs were tied together at the ankle. No, that wasn't quite right. They weren't exactly tied together. They were joined together. The flesh and bones fused into a single, clumsy, flapping limb. The boy knew that he was hunting something or somebody who was in the dark, winding tunnels around him, ahead of him, to both sides of him, above him, below him, behind him. Dean had been down in the ancient catacombs for all of his eternal life. Though he spoke little Spanish, an old proverb came to Dean's mind.
Al vivo la hogaza, y al muerto la morta.
The boy heard it somewhere deep inside the vault of his skull.
A large loaf of bread for the living, and for the dead, a shroud.
His own voice was soundless, though Dean knew that he had moved his lips. Somewhere far ahead was the salvation of a wine-dark ocean, breaking ceaselessly on a shingled shore where discarded needles lay mountain high. There was a ledge on the right where squatted an ancient man in stained frock coat and cracked knee boots, clutching a cane of polished ebony, its handle carved from silver in the shape of a lion's head.
I disremember the source, dear boy, but it is better by far to dwell on your knees than to die on your feet. Is it not so, dear boy?
Ryan was also into the heart of a whirling, bright nightmare. But it wasn't seeming like a nightmare. No gibbering phantoms and dusty corridors, no terror swimming up from the deeps of some half-remembered horror. Just a profound sense of unease. There was a threat of violence hanging in the air, like an unspoken promise. Ryan was walking through a large, pre-dark house, filled with wonderful paintings and ornate statues in gold and silver and bronze, horsemen spearing snarling lions and dying warriors slipping from life, artistically posed. The furniture was covered in large white sheets of spotless linen, and the windows were veiled in the same material, giving a strange, muted quality to the light, like wandering in an undersea cavern. Ryan was conscious of clocks ticking in every room. One was ormolued blue porcelain, topped with a placid bust of a serene Roman emperor wearing a laurel wreath. As Ryan passed it, the clock sounded. There were high double doors that opened into the oppressive heat of an orangery, the leaded panes of glass smeared with moisture and golden lichen. The sense of unease was deepening, but Ryan kept looking back over his shoulder. Lush foliage, dank with condensation, filled the enormous room, and it seemed that someone had just that moment moved out of sight, timing their disappearance to coincide perfectly with his turning. Ryan stepped out onto a long terrace, dotted with large stone jars, taller than a man. The sky was totally overcast, with not a trace of sun, though the yew hedges left odd, sharply angular shadows. Ryan saw a copper statue of a child, stooped as though in fear, hands raised to ward off a blow. The name on the plinth simply read, Lazarus. There was a lake just visible at the bottom of a rolling expanse of lawn, and Ryan saw a domed monument, stark against the hillside beyond. He was feeling sick, and he walked to sit on a wrought iron bench and doubled over. A tangled mass of raw, bloody meat and thin red worms writhed at his feet. Dean had sunk into the mud, feeling it suck him down like soft hands that brushed against him, then clung and pulled, dragging him into the warm darkness. It was comfortable to slip into the dark, away from all worries, no longer any need to fight against it. The only thing stopping him was a tiny bright bead of light, like a dazzling eye, searching him out in the black sludge, homing in on him like a missile seeking its target, becoming larger and brighter. Dean pushed his hands out, as though warding off a blow, trying to hinder the swelling light from preventing him from enjoying the bliss of restful sleep. It felt as though someone were shaking him hard, an angry giant that dwelled within the silent depths of the thick, welcoming ooze, squeezing his wet body. Ryan ran away from the bench, leaving the wriggling mess behind him on the raked gravel walk, the taste horrid in his dry mouth. He entered the maze of dark, bitter yews boxed around him, 20 feet high, a fear of the demiurge pursuing him, driving him deeper into the heart of the riddle. It was beginning to snow. The large, soft white flakes settled on the trodden ground and on the hedges, on his own dark curly hair and across his broad shoulders, soaking through him. There was painful pressure in his chest, across his temples, behind his eyes, holding him from the rest he desperately wanted, probing at his nape, squeezing his wet body. As soon as they'd appeared together in the gateway, almost a half hour after Ryan had made his jump, Mildred had gotten to them, throwing open the door before the discs had ceased glowing. They all helped hauling them out and laid them on the floor of the control area. Abe stared down at the two unconscious figures.
They chilled, Mildred?
Give it time, Abe.
12 worrying minutes passed without much sign of returning life. Then Mildred straightened, smiling at the anxious faces around her in the control room of the Matrans unit.
They're both coming around now. Father and son recovering together.
Thank Gaia.
They'll be fine. Their pulses and respiration are about what you'd expect after what they've been through.
Good. One thing I don't understand is why they both smell of smoke and why they're both soaking wet. Feeling better, lover?
Some. How long since we finished that last jump?
I guess I must have dozed off again.
Closing in on 2 hours.
What I need is a hot...